Okay. Good morning, everyone. Before we begin, I'll take a roll call. I know our chairman is absent. Commissioner Applin.
He's on listen only, Chair.
Oh, there he is. Yeah, there he is. Okay. Commissioner Abel.
Present.
Commissioner Bell's absent. Commissioner Galo. She's going to be late. Commissioner Hildebrand. We'll probably hear from him soon. Commissioner Latimer.
Present.
Commissioner Patton.
Present.
And I'm present. Okay, this meeting is called to order January 21st, 2021 at 9:35 a.m. Before proceeding with any business, I believe Mr. Smith has a statement to make.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the Office of the Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551. Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I'd like for this fact to be noted in the official record of the meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Before we continue, I would like to announce that action item number 8, grant of drainage easement, Hidalgo County, approximately 1 acre at the Acero Llano Grande Rural Birding Center, has been withdrawn from today's agenda. Commissioners, as a reminder, please announce your name before you speak. Presenters, if you'll please remember to speak slowly for the court reporter. Thank you. Okay, first item of business, approval of the minutes from the commission meeting held November 10th, 2020, which have already been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
Commissioner Latimer, so moved.
And I'll second. Patton will second.
Okay, Latimer. Motion, Patton second. Voting, as we all have learned to not like, but we have to do it, will be by roll call.
Applin, so, yes.
Applin, yes.
Bell's absent. Galo is not on yet.
Latimer, yes.
Patton, yes.
Yes. I vote yes. That's enough. Motion carries. The next thing we want to have the acknowledgement of the list of the donations, which are always extremely well appreciated. Is there a motion for approval on the donation list?
So moved. Patton.
Patton's motion. Second.
Second.
Hildebrand.
Oh, there he is. How you doing? Good morning, Commissioner. Okay. Do the roll call vote again. Beaver, you're up.
Applin, yes.
Applin, yes.
Abel? Commissioner Abel? Commissioner Hildebrand?
Yes.
Latimer, yes.
Yes.
Abel, yes.
And Scott, yes. Motion carries. Next item of business, consideration of contracts, which have also been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved, Patton.
Second by?
Latimer, second.
Okay. So let's start down the list.
Applin, yes.
Abel, yes.
Commissioner Hildebrand?
Oh, sorry. Hildebrand, yes. I was waiting for Galo.
Yeah, she's not on yet. She'll be on in a little while.
Latimer, yes.
Yes.
Patton, yes.
And Scott, yes. Okay, that gets us to action item number 1, rule review. Recommended adoption of proposed changes and completed rule review. We've got three sections here, 53, 59, 69, finance, parks, resource protection. Mr. James Murphy, please make your presentation.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm James Murphy, General Counsel for the Department. I'm here today to present on the rule review adoption for chapters 53, 59, and 69. Next slide, please. I'll begin with a short summary of the rule review process. You've heard this before in other meetings, so I'll attempt to be brief with it. Our rule review requirements come from Texas Government Code Section 2001.039. All state agency rules, also known as regulations, must be reviewed no less frequently than once every 4 years. This review must include an assessment of whether the reasons for initially adopting a rule continue to exist. The notice of the proposed review is published in the Texas Register for public comment, and regulations must be adopted with changes or repealed based upon the review. Slide 3, please. We break our rule review process into three meetings on a chapter-by-chapter basis. The first meeting is notification to the commission of the beginning of the rule review process that is then published in the Texas Register. The second meeting is permission to publish the proposed rule or repeals resulting from the rule review in the Texas Register, again with public comment. And then the third meeting, which is the meeting here today on this group of chapters, we seek adoption of any proposed rule changes and repeals. We also seek adoption of the completed rule review, meaning retention of the remaining rules. Next slide, 4, please. Here's just to orient you on the calendar. The three highlighted chapters are those before us today for adoption. As you'll see, we have one more meeting for the in March for the remaining three chapters, and then our rule review will be completed for this 4-year cycle. Next slide, please. We had no changes proposed to the two chapters, 59 for parks and 69 for resource protection, and we will focus solely on the proposed changes to chapter 53. Next slide, please. The first change is to chapter 53, subchapter A on fees, section 53.16. This is on vessel, motor, and marine licensing fees. We have a clarification that a replacement marine dealer, manufacturer, or distributor's card does not include a replacement decal. There is a separate fee for a replacement decal of $126. We also have an amendment to remove an unnecessary word, so just a typo correction there. Next slide, please. Our second change is to Chapter 53, Subchapter B on stamps. This is Section 53.60. We are eliminating the exemption from the upland bird stamp requirement for persons hunting under a non-resident spring turkey license and removal of references to a discontinued collector's edition stamp package. Next slide, please. The next change that we have is to subchapter F, specifically section 53.100 for bonded title, acceptable situations for vessels and outboard motors. We have an amendment just to correct an inaccurate internal reference. Minor change here. Next slide, please. We received no public comments on any of these rule changes. Next slide, please. And staff recommends the commission adopt the following motions. Motion 1, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts an amendment to Title 31, Texas Administrative Code, Sections 53.16 concerning vessel, motor, and marine licensing fees, 53.60 concerning stamps, and 53.100 concerning bonded title acceptable situations, with changes as necessary to the proposed text as published in the December 18, 2020 issue of the Texas Register, cited as 45 Texas Register 9168, 9169, 9170. Motion 2. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the completed rule review of Title 31, Texas Administrative Code, Chapters 53, 59, and 69, as published in the October 2nd, 2020 issue of the Texas Register, cited as 45 Texas Register 7045, finding that the original reasons for adopting the rules continue to exist, as required by Government Code Section 2001.039, and authorizes the publication of a Notice of Adopted Rule Review to that effect in the Texas Register. And with that, next slide, please, Andrew. That concludes my presentation. I'm available for any questions.
Okay, any questions by any commissioners? Okay, we have nobody signed up to speak. Any other comments from the commission or any staff member? There being none, Do I have a motion for approval regarding the first motion?
Patton moved to approve.
Patton so moved. Patton second.
Hildebrand second.
Got it. Okay, we get to do the roll call again. I vote yes.
Applin, yes.
Abel, yes.
Commissioner Hildebrand.
All is yes. Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Latimer.
Yes.
Patton, yes.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Okay, is there a motion for approval regarding the second motion?
Hildebrand moved.
Patton second.
Go to the vote, the roll call. I vote aye.
Applin, yes.
Abel, yes.
Hildebrand, yes.
Latimer, yes.
Patton, yes.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. That gets us to action item number two, a grant of fiber optic cable easement, Calhoun County, approximately 3/10 of an acre at Guadalupe Delta Wildlife Management Area. Mr. Estrella, please give your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioners, for the record, my name is Jason Estrella. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This first item I'll be talking about is the grant of fiber optic cable easement of approximately 0.3 acres at the Guadalupe Delta Wildlife Management Area in Calhoun County. Next slide, please. Calhoun County is located in the central Texas coast. Next slide, please. The Wildlife Management Area is comprised of three units. The unit we'll be discussing today is the Mission Lake Unit, located in northwest Calhoun County, approximately 13 miles southwest of Port Lavaca. Next slide, please. The Wildlife Management Area's Mission Lake Unit consists of just under 4,500 acres of coastal marsh and associated uplands. American Electric Power owns and maintains electric distribution lines which traverse the Mission Lake Unit of the WMA. The easements for these distribution lines precede TPWD's acquisition of the WMA. Next slide, please. AEP plans to add a communication line using aerial installation, except at the entrance road to the Wildlife Management Area, where the existing spans will not support the communications cable. AEP requests an easement to drill a conduit under the entrance road right-of-way and install the communication cable within this conduit. The proposed easement will be 827 feet long by 15 feet wide. Staff and AEP find that this method of installation will minimize impact to the WMA. Next slide, please. AEP will pay upfront damages for the drill pits and conduit installations. In exchange for annual payments as prescribed in the TPWD damage and fee schedule, AEP has agreed to execute letters of agreement with the department supplementing the existing easements for electric transmission lines and associated infrastructure across the WMA northern boundary. AEP will be required to negotiate surface use agreements for all future work, restore all impacts of the WMA, and pay damages where incurred. Next slide, please. Here you can see the location of the proposed easement designated by the red star in relation to the Mission Lake unit along the north part of the unit itself. Next slide, please. Here you can see the proposed easement zoomed in with the green line in the direction it will lay, going under the main entrance road just north of the main facility of the WMA itself. Next slide, please. In public comments, we have received 114 responses, all in support. Next slide, please. Staff recommends to the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the resolution attached as Exhibit A. This concludes my presentation, and I'll take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. We have no one signed up to speak, So are there any more comments from the commission or staff? If not, we need a motion for approval.
Hildebrand moved.
Patton second.
Okay, we'll start the, go ahead, and then I'll vote yes. Commissioner Abel?
Abel, yes.
Hildebrand, yes.
Latimer, yes.
Patton, yes.
And I think that takes care of that. Okay, that moves us on to action item number three, acquisition of land, Fannin County.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioners, again, for the record, my name is Jason Estrella with the Land Conservation Program. This next item is acquisition of land of approximately 40 acres at Bottom State Park in Fannin County. Next slide, please. Fannin County is located in North Texas along the Oklahoma border. Next slide, please. Bottom State Park is located in the central area of Fannin County, just southeast of Bottom and of the city of Bottom and approximately 55 miles northeast of Dallas. Next slide, please. The state park opened in 1936 with the help of the Civilian Conservation Corps. The park comprises of 261 acres in central Fannin County and includes a 65-acre lake, rolling prairies, and woodlands. The park sits in the Blackland Prairie ecoregion, which is a high-priority historic prairie ecosystem. Next slide, please. The subject tract is an adjacent 40-acre property along the state park's northwest corner. The current owners manage it to restore valuable native habitat. Acquisition would clean up park boundary and provide opportunities for access and recreation to the west side of the lake. Current owner offered a sale to the department and party signed a sale contract contingent upon authorization by the Parks and Wildlife Commission. Next slide, please. Here you can see the location of the subject tract outlined in yellow in relation to the Bottom State Park itself outlined in red. Next slide, please. In public comments, we have received 144 responses, all in support. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission authorizes the executive director to take all necessary steps to acquire approximately 40 acres in Fannin County for addition to Bottom State Park. This concludes my presentation. Now I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. We have one speaker signed up to speak, Ms. Evelyn Mertz.
Okay, you don't have Evelyn on the line.
So we can just proceed, right?
Yes, yeah, we can go ahead.
Okay, so any comments from Commissioner staff? Being none, need a motion for approval?
Patton moves to approve.
Latimer seconds.
Roll call vote. I vote yes.
Applin, yes.
Abel, yes.
Hildebrand, yes.
Latimer, yes.
Patton, yes.
No opposition. Motion carries. Moves to action item number four, grant of valve station easement, Nueces County. Approximately one-tenth of an acre at Mustang Island State Park. Mr. Estrella, you're back on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioners, for the record, my name is Jason Estrella with the Land Conservation Program. This next item is a grant of valve station easement of approximately 0.1 acres at Mustang Island State Park in Nueces County. Next slide, please. Nueces County is located along the southern Texas coast. Next slide, please. The state park itself sits on the island just outside of Corpus Christi. Next slide, please. The state park consists of nearly 4,000 acres of coastal sand dunes, marshes, and 5 miles of beachfront. The park was acquired from the Wilson family in 1972 and opened as a state park in 1979. City of Port Aransas requests a 30-foot by 50-foot easement adjacent to State Highway 361 for the installation and maintenance of a high-pressure gas main valve station to service the residents of Port Aransas. Next slide. An easement granted to South Cross Energy for a very similar purpose sits southwest and adjacent to the requested easement. The city requests a separate easement to maintain its own valves and tie in to South Cross's privately owned line. Staff believes an easement of this size will have minimal impact on the natural resources, including a nearby wetland. The station will include four-inch steel-coated piping, valves and fittings, and will be concealed by a wooden privacy fence. Next slide, please. On this map, you can see the location of the proposed easement designated by the red star in relation to the state park itself, outlined in red. Next slide. Zooming in, you can see the approximate location and area of the easement outlined in yellow as it sits just along the north side of Highway 361. Next slide, please. We have received 102 public comments, all in support. Next slide. Staff recommends that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the resolution attached as Exhibit A. This concludes my presentation, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you for your presentation. Any discussion by the commission? There being none, there are no speakers signed up. Any additional comments from commission or staff? Then we need a motion for approval.
Patton second.
Okay, we've got the roll call.
Patton, aye. Abel, yes.
Hildebrand, yes.
Latimer, yes.
Patton, yes.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Action item number 5, exchange of driveway easements, Bexar County. Approximately 1 acre at the Government Canyon State Natural Area. You're on again, James, or Jason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioners, again, for the record, my name is Jason Estrella. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This final presentation that I have is the exchange of driveway easements, approximately 1 acre at Government Canyon State Natural Area in Bexar County. Next slide. Bexar County is located in South Central Texas. Next slide. The state natural area itself sits in northwestern Bexar County, just along the outskirts of the city of San Antonio. Next slide. The state natural area was originally acquired by the city of San Antonio to protect recharge of the Edwards Aquifer and now covers a little over 12,000 acres. The property was transferred to TPWD for the creation of the state natural area beginning in the mid-1990s. A landowner whose home resides on an inholding has an undeveloped driveway easement which runs through a very sensitive area of the park. The landowner currently has an informal agreement with an adjacent landowner to access his property from an existing driveway, but that neighbor's property has been offered for sale and future access is in doubt. Next slide, please. TPWD staff has negotiated a new driveway route west of the current easement. State Natural Area staff believe this driveway easement will allow for easier road development if needed and will minimize impacts to the natural and cultural resources of the park. Staff further believes exchanging the existing easement for the proposed easement will eliminate any possibility for future development of the existing easement. Next slide, please. Here you can see a map of the layout, the area of the easements in question. The inholding sits within the red polygon, odd-shaped, there near the middle of the map. The original driveway is the in the north part with the green line. Again, that runs through a very sensitive area of the park. The proposed driveway on the southwestern area of the map is in yellow and ties into the existing neighbor driveway. in blue. The state natural area itself, again, does surround the entire inhold. Next slide, please. In public comments, we have received 121 responses, all in support. Next slide. Staff recommends that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the resolution attached as Exhibit A. This concludes my presentation, and I will take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation there, Jason. Any discussion by the commission? Hearing none, we have no speaker signed up to speak. Any other comments? Second.
Latimer, second.
Okay, I'll vote aye.
Aye. Applett. Abel, yes.
Hildebrand, yes.
Latimer, yes.
Patton, yes.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Action item number 6, amendment of deed, Montgomery County, approximately 8/10 of an acre at Lake Houston Wilderness Park. Mr. Ted Hollingsworth, please do your presentation.
Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This item results from a request from the City of Houston to modify a deed for a property that we transferred into their custody for their care and development about 14 years ago. Next slide, please. The property straddles the Harris County-Montgomery County line, about 4,900 acres. It was acquired in the 1990s and operated in the 1990s as Lake Houston State Park. Next slide, please. The department never was able to accrue the resources to implement the public use plan for Lake Houston State Park. And so working with the City of Houston and the commission at the time, the decision was made to transfer the park because the city was able to bring resources to bear to actually develop that park and open it to the public while protecting the truly special resources on that 4,900 acres of native forest. Next slide, please. As you can see in this map, it's a truly, truly unique expanse of open space surrounded by spring, woodlands, other development. Houston, basically hemmed in now is a very large urban park, certainly the largest in Houston itself. Again, a little over 4,900 acres. And this is the subject of the request that we've had. Next slide, please. Again, heavily forested, native forest, mature native forest, bounded on the east by the San Jacinto River, the East Fork, and bounded on the west by Caney Creek. Again, for many years, there was only a very small Girl Scout cat facility there that was all we were able to maintain and open to the public. Since the City of Houston has taken over, there's a new park entrance, an internal road system, a small lake, and some cabins have been developed. So the park is getting more of the use that was intended when we acquired it. Next slide, please. Those of you familiar with Houston know that there are now three loop systems surrounding the city, the outermost loop system being the Grand Parkway or Parkway 99 system, which is nearing completion. In the 1990s, the preferred route for the Grand Parkway was to run right through the middle of Lake Houston State Park and would have cut that park in half. Staff worked with the Grand Parkway Association, TxDOT, and Federal Highways Administration. And in exchange for the for them abandoning that route that would have divided the park in half. We agreed to work cooperatively with them on developing a route on the north side of the park along the FM 1485 corridor. Next slide. I'm experiencing quite a lag time on this slide, so I'll simply proceed. That corridor has now been established. You may recall that last year you were asked to remove 5.5 acres from under the reversion clause in the deed so that that could become a part of the right-of-way for the new highway. The development of the highway has necessitated the relocation of the existing Entergy electric transmission line, which services those communities on the north side of the park. The relocation of that transmission line is going to be entirely inside the right-of-way, but in order to comply with statutes that mandate clearing of vegetation within a certain distance of that high line to prevent fire, and as we all know from recent years' experience, this is a very serious issue, maintaining the safety of those lines by keeping vegetation out of that right-of-way. It is necessary for an additional 18-foot strip by a little over 2,000 feet long to be cleared. Next slide. At the time this issue was brought to our attention, TxDOT had already let a contract for that clearing. They were unaware of the reversion clause, and because of the expense that would have been incurred by TxDOT at the taxpayer's expense to demobilize and remobilize that effort, we went ahead and entered into a right of entry to allow that work to proceed. In order that work may be can go forward in the future without having to come back to the commission each time, the city requests that we take that 18-foot strip at 0.8 acres and remove it from under the protection of the reversion clause so that they can enter into an easement or whatever agreements are necessary in the future so that that strip of land can be maintained, cleared, and keep that line protected and in compliance with the necessary statutes. Next slide. This map shows where that strip is in the northeast corner of the Lake Houston Wilderness Park. Again, just a narrow strip adjacent to that 5.5 acres that the agency allowed to be conveyed to TxDOT for the purposes of developing the Grand Parkway last year. Next slide. We have received 140 responses, one of those in opposition, and the author of that response specifically stated they believe the city of Houston is destroying too much natural habitat and opposes destroying any more habitat. Next slide. Staff does recommend that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the resolution attached as Exhibit A. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any discussion by the commission? Since we do not have any speakers signed up, any more comments from the commission or staff? Not being any, we need a motion for approval.
Patton moves for approval.
Colbrand second.
I vote aye.
Abel, yes.
Commissioner Hillbrand?
Yes.
Sorry. Latimer, yes.
Patton, yes.
Any opposition?
Galo's here, and I vote yes.
Ah, welcome.
Hi.
Hearing no opposition, motion carried.
Bell is also here, and I vote yes.
Okay, good to hear your voice. Okay, that gets us on to action item number 7, relocation of access easement, Jack County, approximately 2 acres at Fort Richardson State Park and Historic Site. Ted, you're up again.
Commissioners, good morning again. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. For the record, I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This item pertains to a long-standing issue that we have at Fort Richardson State Park and Historic Site. I'm happy to say I believe we have a resolution to that issue. The next slide. Fort Richardson is west, northwest of Fort Worth. It's actually in the city of Jacksboro. Jacksboro is actually a community that built up around the Frontier Fort. It was a Frontier Fort community that sprung up in the 1860s and 70s during the heyday of Fort Richardson. Next slide, please. As I mentioned yesterday, if you have not had the privilege of visiting Fort Richardson State Park and Historic Site, you may want to put that on your bucket list. It is a extremely well-preserved example of a frontier fort. The living history demonstrations are very well done. It's a site that was occupied by buffalo soldiers and frontier army soldiers alike. Next slide, please. We acquired the property in 1970. We actually acquired several tracts, but the largest of those tracts that we acquired, we didn't acquire all of the property owned by the landowner. The park is now about 430 acres, but the tract immediately south of the park is a 280-acre tract, and the owner, the seller of the property in 1970, retained an easement across the state park and historic site to get to the property that they continued to own. Just a fantastic frontier fort, example of a frontier fort. And if you're ever in that neck of the woods, you should put it on your list of things to do to go by and see it. It was active during the height of the what's known as the Indian Wars during the 1870s and was occupied until 1878. Next slide, please. Again, the seller of that largest portion of that property to us, we did not buy all their holdings. We bought as much as we thought was appropriate for maintenance and interpretation of the fort proper. And the sellers kept an easement specifically for farming, ranching, and hunting activities. The easement did specify the access route, which is what was the existing road and is now the primary park road through the state historic site. In the 50 years since that purchase, the owner of that property has not used that easement. The property has been maintained as open space, but farming, ranching, and hunting have not occurred actively on that property, and there's not been a request to use that easement. A couple of years ago, that owner sold to a new owner, and that new owner has begun using that access route, that easement route, to maintain a modest ranching operation on that 280 acres south of the state park and historic site. Again, that existing road that was defined, that was specified in the deed, is now a primary park road, goes through a public use area, and goes through a riparian area, and the development of that easement into a all-weather road would be destructive of of valuable native habitat and would also be an imposition on state park operations, including the visitor experience. Next slide, please. So as a result, staff had worked to identify a route for an access road for this adjacent landowner that would avoid going through the public use area, would avoid going through important riparian habitat, would avoid some topography that would be very difficult to maintain erosion control on, and which actually runs alongside the perimeter fence, the boundary fence on the east side of the park. The road would then serve as a fire break. The only vegetation that would be removed is some brush and cactus, which is actually impinging on the native prairie anyway. And the road would lead the owner to a point in the fence line adjacent to a very good all-weather oil and gas road and make his operations easier. As a result, the staff strongly recommends an exchange, an abandonment of the historic easement and replacement with a new easement to follow that line indicated in black in this map. Next slide, please. The new access route would not go through any public use facilities. Again, would follow the boundary line, would be a much easier road to maintain with less impact to natural resources. And again, staff does recommend that that route be swapped out for the existing easement route. Next slide, please. We received 236 responses, all in favor. Next slide. And staff does recommend that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopt the following motion. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts the resolution attached as Exhibit A. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ted. Any discussion by the commission? No speakers are signed up to speak, so need a motion for approval.
Boulderbrand moved.
Latimer second.
Atlin,
roll.
Yes.
I vote yes.
Abel, yes.
Bell, yes.
Gato, yes.
Hildebrand, yes.
Latimer, yes.
Hatton, yes.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Next, we go to action item 8, which has been withdrawn from this commission meeting. Action item 9. Texas Farm and Ranchlands Conservation Council update. Mr. Christopher Abenauer, please make your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chris Abernathy. I'm the program coordinator for the Texas Farm and Ranch Land Conservation Program. We're housed in the Land Conservation Program office. Next slide, please, Andrew. Next slide, please. Mr. Chairman, the Farm and Ranch Program was established in 2005 by the legislature. It was originally placed under the General Land Office. It maintained there for 10 years. Primarily, the General Land Office funded conservation easements using Coastal Impact Assistance Programs called CIAP, which were primarily for coastal conservation easements. In 2015, the legislature transferred the program under House Bill 1925 to Texas Parks and Wildlife. Under our program and under that legislation, we receive an appropriation of $2 million each biennium. Next slide, please. We have, well, Mr. Reed Morin, our chairman, is also the chairman of the commission, and he becomes our chairman for the Farm and Ranch Council, and we have our oversight provided by them. We have 12 members in the council. Six are what are called ex officio, as determined by their office, and six are governor appointee. Next slide, please. Just a brief overview of who our council members are. Again, Mr. Morian is our chairman, Mr. Sid Miller from the Department of Agriculture, Ms. Christy Oates from the NRCS State Conservation Office, Mr. Rex Isom from Soil Water Conservation Board, A&M Natural Resources Institute, Dr. Roel Lopez, and I can't see my last bullet. Andrew, is there any way I can slide that up?
It's Peter Lake, chairman.
Peter Lake. I'm sorry. I should know everybody, but you know. Again, next slide, please. Thank you. And then we have our governor appointees. They represent various facets of agriculture within the state. Our most recent is Mr. Romy Swanson, but we have Ms. Abby Frank. She's a bank loan officer. Mr. Romy Swanson is a member of the Texas Audubon Society. Mr. Gilbert Rojas is a farm owner. Mr. Dave Scott and Mrs. Leslie Kinsel are both basically ranch owners or participate heavily in the agricultural community. And Ms. Natty Kohler is a ranch owner. Next slide, please. So the primary mission of the Farm Ranch Program is to protect working lands. And so we define working lands as those that have an ag exemption, that have produced food and fiber, that have wildlife habitat on them, that have sensitive species, that have watershed and water quality issues that we need to protect. The program, out of the appropriation that I receive each 2 years, I'm allowed to spend basically all but 10%, so about 90% of my funds, about $1.8 million, go towards providing grants to qualified land trust for acquisition of conservation easements. We have an internal ranking system, and that helps us decide which priority to give to which properties. It's based on, it gives points for various things like development, water quality, watershed, size, species, habitat. Each of those categories are given an internal evaluation by an internal ranking team. Next slide, please. Since the transfer of the program to Texas Parks and Wildlife, we've approved funding for 21 projects. As you can see by the map, the majority of them occur in Central Texas. That just happens to be a very, you know, desirable area. Lots of development, as we know, in the Central Texas area. We have a few coastal properties. We have one on the Red River, which is the Bartish Ranch. And we have a property out on the New Mexico-Texas border in far west Texas. Next slide, please. So we've been, I think, very successful, Mr. Chairman. To date, since the transfer, let me just preface this by saying I'm not discussing or talking about the numbers prior to the transfer to the agency. I'm referring to the active work that's been done since the transfer in 2016. We've protected over 24,000 acres of lands. We have another 3,300 acres that are actually in process currently right now. Next slide, please. I want to reference, I'm going to show you a lot of statistics and information in the next few slides about the program, but I want to let you know that Texas A&M Natural Resources Institute recently completed a study, a very in-depth study of the entire program, and they looked at a lot of statistics and economics and wildlife value and water quality value, and so all of the numbers that I'm going to show you in the next few slides are all derived from that study. And again, these numbers are only reflected on the current properties that have been closed. So we've almost $3 million in agricultural commodities are produced on the properties that we've protected. Next slide, please. Over $170,000 in wildlife value provided annually. Next slide, please. This is really, I think, very notable. This is $7.3 million in water replacement costs are provided annually on those 24,000 acres. Next slide, please. I think, again, we're continuing our financial success. So I mentioned that we get $2 million each biennium. Obviously, that equals about $6 million. But, again, I'm referencing these funds only reference the properties that have closed to date. I try not to do my statistics until all the properties have closed and I can make those calculations. Anyway, we have spent $3.8 million in state funds. We've had great federal funding success with $11 million. And we have a lot of match funds that are provided either by the landowners or other entities that want to help us protect those properties. $6 million in match funds. Next slide, please. Again, return on investment, 27 to 1. So that basically means for every dollar that we spend, we get $27 worth of conservation value. I don't know any place else that has a 27 to 1 return on investment. We're only spending an average of $148 per acre on our properties out of state funds, and 86% of our projects get other funding applied to them. Typically, the NRCS, they're our largest funding other source outside of the department. It's federal money. It comes from the ASEP program, the Agricultural Conservation Easement Program. It's funded through the Farm Bill. And we have a leveraging ratio of all of those funds. Again, $1 of ours brings in $10 of leverage funds. So, again, I think we're very successful. Next slide, please. I have a few properties I want to show you. These are just some really nice pictures and some really nice highlights of some properties that I selectively picked out so y'all can get an idea of the kinds of properties we're trying to protect. Next slide, please. So this is the Patella Ranch. It's the one I mentioned to you. It's on the border of Texas and New Mexico. It's directly adjacent to the Guadalupe Mountains National Park. It's over 6,000 acres. And originally, the original property was almost 11,000 acres. But the original owner, apparently a very famous pioneer geologist named Wallace Pratt, owned over 11,000 acres. And he sold half of his property to the National Park Service to help them establish the Guadalupe Mountains National Park. This property, because it is bordered by the park, it's basically the green line that you see going through the easement is the road to McKittrick Canyon. So there's just a lot of habitat that's worthy of protection here. It's also the only project that we have in what's called the Trans-Pecos Ecoregion. For most people, that kind of means the Chihuahuan Desert, again, in the West Texas area. Next slide, please. Thank you. Because of its location and because of its altitude, it's just the diversity of plant communities here is really tremendous. It's high desert. And I'll show you another picture, but basically the elk herds that are in the Lincoln National Forest and the mountains of Guadalupe National Park come to this ranch to winter in the lower altitudes in the winter. Next slide, please. Again, Playa Lake, a lot of opportunity for wildlife, for cattle. Next slide, please. Our next property is the Krause Ranch. It's in Real County, located near Lakey. 1,640 acres, and it just has tremendous water assets, a very prolific property, as you'll see in the next few slides. Next slide, please. Lakey Ranch is a working cattle ranch, I wanted to say that, and that landowner has taken tremendous strides to restore the property. This particular water feature is called the Sinkhole Springs. Obviously, there's a lot of karst topography in this property, very critical to our drinking water and to water filtration and to the recharge zone. Next slide, please. This is the West Fork of the Frio. Heavily, protected, the banks of the Frio protected through, as it runs through this property. You can see a little bit of channel maintenance there by the landowner to slow the water down. It's just a really nice job that they're taking care of. Next slide, please. This one is called, it's another picture of Sinkhole Springs on your left. And Church Springs on your right. Again, a very prolific property. And actually, this landowner, if you're interested, he actually maintains a very well-developed website. You can look at all of the water features. You can learn about all the conservation methods that he's taken in the last few years. Next slide, please. So, Mr. Chairman, I saved the best for last, I think. Mr. Chairman Maureen was extremely impressed by these next few pictures. We all were. Right now, this is kind of our crowning jewel. It was ranked number one during a selection process a year ago. It's adjacent to the Guadalupe River State Park, Honey Creek State Natural Area. It contributes to that open space. It contributes to the headwater of Honey Creek. Next slide, please. This picture speaks for itself, Mr. Chairman. This is an underground river. This is Honey Creek Cave. It's part of the largest cave system in the state. Has over 20 miles of underground stream passages. Several threatened karst species. Any species of dependent on the karst habitat is thriving in here, and it's very critical we take care of this. I did want to mention that this particular property has been under one family owner since its inception, since 1860. It's a working cattle ranch, and it's on the National Register of Historic Places. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this is Honey Creek. It is a tributary to the Guadalupe River, and eventually does flow into Canyon Lake Reservoir. So, again, very critical. These properties, although they're not significantly huge, they are critical to drinking water. Obviously, Canyon Lake provides water to over 2 million people. So these kinds of protections are just deeply needed. And I'm going to show you one more picture that is quite astonishing. Next slide, please. This is Honey Creek under a high flow event, Honey Creek Cave. This water is flowing into Honey Creek out of the cave you saw earlier. Tremendous water source, a real good example of what a karst topography does, what a recharge system does, and how it contributes to the water table and to drinking water throughout the state. And that is my last slide, Mr. Chairman. I'm open for any questions or comments you may have.
So, Commissioner Hildebrand, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me? Okay, sorry. So you've only got roughly $2 million a year to spend, 1.8, you said?
Yes, sir.
And tell me about the prioritization in terms of how you pick particular land, because I assume you're not Rice Field in Colorado County is going to be low on the priority scale.
Mr. Chairman, we have criteria, as I mentioned. They're numeric. They range from up to, and the total point system is for up to 100. It's as much as 30 and as little as 10. Development values, critical habitat is another one. Water quality impacts are another one. Economics are another one. There's just several different criteria. And so when I get my applications, and just as a side note, my application process, again, this year will run from March 1st to April 30th, and the land trust will submit their applications during that time. And as the applications come in through that window, I generate another spreadsheet that allows me to look at what their budget requests are, and what my appropriation is. And we have an internal ranking committee that's made up of specialists and basically subject matter experts almost in every aspect covered by the criteria within the department. We even actually have an external subject matter expert that represents the agricultural community, Mr. Jay Evans. He's a ranch manager that lives in Austin. So I bring those gentlemen together, all those people together. We look at each of the projects individually. We look at all the photos, all the information. Prior to this, wildlife biologists have gone out to most of these properties. They've taken pictures of these properties. They've given us an assessment of these properties to try to make sure that what's represented in the application is actually what's on the ground. So we take all of that information, and we meet for a good long day, and we basically just talk about each one of these. And then I send the selection team away. We make our rankings privately, and we come back, and then I make composites of those rankings. And essentially what I do is I take my appropriation, and I take the budget request, and we try to fund everything we can until we run out of money. We had 11 requests last time I funded 8 of them, and I spent my $1.8 million.
All right, so you're buying pretty small tracts of land, but the idea is that landowners that want to enter into the program, they push these opportunities to you. You don't go out and actively seek them.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, my applicant is a land trust. I don't do business with a private landowner. The land trust are 501c3 non-governmental organizations. We generate a grant agreement with them. They represent the landowner. They're the ones that do all the due diligence. They bring the project to us. They complete the application. They walk the landowner through the process. And then in my grant agreement, not only do I pay for my acquisition costs, but I pay for due diligence, which includes surveys, appraisals, mapping, baseline surveys, the closing costs, everything involved that would be required for us to acquire that easement. It's almost like the professional services contract that you would have with the consultant, but it's with the land trust, and it's a grant agreement.
But and the land trust, so they serve as the intermediary between you and the landowner.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not the chairman. That's Mr. Scott.
I always address the chairman.
That's fine. And so just a little more, the conditions around the conservation easements, are those fairly standard contractual obligations on the part of the landowner to obviously not develop, not destroy the habitat, not – I'm not sure of all of
you're
the
doing a good criteria. Job of summarizing, Mr. Chairman. You're doing a really good job of summarizing. There's no subdivision. There's no mineral development. Typically, there's no new roads built, no new impervious surfaces built. Not every conservation easement is identical. The primary objective is to maintain the current status quo, the baseline, the agricultural production, the way it was when we first brought the property in. These conservation easements are perpetual. That's a lot to consider if you're a landowner. It's a lot to consider when you're writing a document that may be looked at somebody 30 years from now when we're all gone. So we try to write an easement that has at least several critical clauses that we want to make sure that we protect.
Yep, understand. I tried to buy a conservation easement back once from the organization, and it is impossible to do. So I understand. Okay, great. Thanks. Now I have an understanding of the program. I didn't know it existed. Great program. Thanks very much for the presentation.
Thank you, sir.
Any other comments? I would also copy of what Commissioner Hildebrand said. I actually have been here a pretty good while, and I learned something off of this deal today. I was not 100% aware of all the stuff you end up doing. I would like to have a conversation with you at some point, but we won't do it right now. But I just have a few other questions and just would like some clarification. But it was a very excellent presentation.
Thank you, sir. The study that I mentioned, done by A&M, there's an executive summary, and there's also the full report. It's available online. We can make sure that y'all have access to that. It's really well done. I worked hand in hand with the folks at A&M, providing them with as much information as I could. It's just a really nice study. It's easy to read. It's graphically friendly, and y'all I think would enjoy looking at it, knowing what's happening.
Speaking for myself, I'd certainly like to have access, and I'm quite sure all the other commissioners would as well, because that's very interesting information. I'm like I said, I've learned some things that I did not even know. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll make sure that happens.
Chairman Scott, just one thing I want to add is that Chairman Morin really hated to not be with y'all today to hear this presentation. As Chris said, you know, he's the chairman of the board. He's a huge proponent of this program, believes very strongly in terms of the leverage and the conservation return on investment that Chris highlighted, very consistent with the private lands outreach work that we do in terms of working cooperatively.